All right, Rav Osai, good morning. It is an incredible schosfar Hashem to be able to learn with all of you. I want to thank Rabbi Richter for giving shir on Tuesday. And it is a great zichos baruch Hashem to be able to learn with all of you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Today's daf is Yud Dalet 14. And we are picking up on Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. Excuse me. 10 lines down from the top. Amar Shmuel. So Amar Shmuel, my time of the Rabbanim, asks Shmuel, what's the logic of the Rabbanim? Now, what are we talking about here? Take a look at Rashi. My time of the Rabbanim, the Amri ki ein bo achrayis nechosim, gova af mina mishubadim. So the Rabbanim have an interesting idea. The Rabbanim say that even when a loan document does not have a clause for as a property encumbrance to go ahead and make, let's say, the debt secured by real property, nevertheless, the creditor has the ability to collect from the encumbered real property of the debtor. So according to Shmuel, what's the logic of the Rabban? In other words, why is it that even if that clause is not included, that it's almost like, not almost like, that halachically we treat it as if it was included? So the Gemara says, Tos Soferu. Savri. Achrayis Tos Soferu. So because the Rabban on hold, that halacha lemaisa, it's ascribed to scribal error. In other words, that line should have been there. The line, namely, that the debtor secures the debt with all of his real property, that should have been included in the document itself, but it was scribal error, scribal omission, and ultimately that's why it's not there. Take a look at Rashi. Achrayis ta'a soferhu, kishaino kasu bishtar soferhu sheta. When that line creates a lien against real property to secure the debt, when that line is missing, that again is ascribed to scribal error. That is attributed to scribal error. Now, what's the logic of the Rabban? The logic of the Rabban is like this. Excuse me. A person is not going to lend money in an unsecured fashion. So as such, it only makes sense that Reuven's only going to lend Shimon money if he knows that the debt is secured by real property. But we look at the loan document, and the loan document says Reuven lends Shimon $10,000, and it doesn't say anything about securing the debt with real property. So we assume that the sofer made a mistake, and the sofer left this line out. He left the line out. Now, how are we able to make that assumption? Because the assumption is that people lend money, they don't want to lend money in a way that they stand to lose. Remember, again, as it is in general, lending money from a halachic perspective is not exactly like you're already, quote unquote, so to speak, taking a financial loss, and that you can't lend with interest. Again, you get much more because you get the beautiful mitzvah of lending to another Jew, but a person is not going to want their debt to remain totally unsecured. So therefore, we take it for granted that every lender would require there to be achrayis, a lien against real property, and therefore, for some reason, that line doesn't appear in the document. It must be a mistake of the sofer, of the scribe. So the Gemara says, "Amar le Rava bar Isi le Rav Idi bar Avin." Omi Amar Shmuel. Did Shmuel really say this? Amar Zvamar Shmuel. Shavach, Shef, Shafar, v'Shibud, Sarach Limloch. Yet Shmuel said that halacha lemaisa. Again, when it comes to improvements, or I should say, best property, right? Improvements or shibud or a lien on real property, Sarach Limloch. So Shmuel says explicitly that when a sofer is going ahead and writing a loan document or writing a document, he needs to explicitly ask the parties, should I include a phrase about a lien against real property? Now, the fact that the sofer has to ask that indicates to us that it's not standard. So therefore, if it's not standard, then the omission should not be simply attributed to scribal error, but rather the omission should be understood perhaps as a willingness between the parties to forego that particular right and entitlement, to which the Gemara says, Lema man da amr ha, lo amr ha. So maybe there's just two different opinions going on over here. Lo kashya, kan bishtar hava, to lo yoiv inish zuzi bichdi, kan bemekachu memkar, do avit inish de zabin aradiyome. So this is very interesting. The Gemara says, maybe we're talking about two different type of documents. One is talking about a loan document, and one is talking about a document that has the sale of real property. When it comes to a loan document, Reuven is going to lend Shimon money. So Reuven is not going to lend Shimon money to, you know, wash the money down the drain. He's going to want to secure his loan. So how does he secure his loan? Achrayis. There's a lien against real property. And therefore, when it comes to a loan, we always assume that there's a lien against real property. And even if for some reason it's not mentioned in the document, we attribute that to scribal error. On the other hand, what about a real estate document? Reuven purchases land from Shimon, or say Reuven sells land to Shimon, and let's say again, Reuven didn't guarantee the sale, right? He didn't put in achrayas. In other words, he didn't say to Shimon, Shimon, if my creditor comes and collects the money, collects the land from you, you could come to me and I'll make you whole. In that case, the omission is not ascribed or is not attributed to scribal error, but rather, again, that is considered to be a willful omission. Why? Because it's common in property transactions, says the Gemara, at least says Shmuel, it's common in property transactions that people will purchase properties. The Gemara's lashon is even to only own it for a day. What does that mean? That when it comes to real estate, people are willing to take a higher level of risk. And I'm willing to purchase a property, especially, again, if I'm getting it at a good price, right? Even though I know that maybe there's a risk that the property is going to be seized afterwards. Again, that'll usually be reflected in some type of discount. So therefore, it's actually very interesting. So therefore, when it comes to property, real property, it is possible that sometimes people buy real property even without a chrais, even without a guarantee or an encumbrance against the seller's other real property. When it comes to a loan, however, when it comes to a loan, a lender is never going to lend money to the borrower unless, of course, it is secured by real property. And therefore, even in the event that that phrase is absent from the loan document, the halacha views it as if it was there, and its omission is attributed to scribal error. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Ovid Inish, Tezabin Araliyoma, first wide line in Rashi. He says, Lesapik Yom Echad, or the Safik Yom Echad, Shemelo Yitrifu Mimenu, Pim Yitrifu, Shemel Isma Meruba, Vaocha Basol Kach Pirosarbe. So essentially, Gemara says it like this: when it comes to loan documents, there's no way a person would ever loan money unless, of course, the loan is secure by a lien against real property. That's just the way loans work. And therefore, again, the line has to be in there. Achrayis, if it's not in there, we treat it as if it was there, because the only reason it wasn't there is because of scribal error. However, when it comes to real estate transactions, people do buy property even though they recognize that there is a loss, a potential loss, and that another creditor could come and seize the property. But again, they figure they'll get to go ahead and use the property for as long as they can. Really quite fascinating. The Gemara tells a story. Ki hahi da'avuha bar'ihi, like the story of Avua Barihi, Zobin Alisa Me'achse. He bought a piece of property from his sister, Asa Balchov Tarfamine. And ultimately, again, the creditor of the sister came and seized the property from Avua Barihi. Asa Lekame de Mar Shmuel. So Avua Barihi comes to Mar Shmuel. He says, what's going on over here? So Avua Barihi comes to Mar Shmuel and he says, listen, essentially, my sister's creditor sees the property that she sold to me. So now she has to make me whole. So Amarle, Salimar says, Amarle, Kosfalacha Achrayis. So Mar Shmuel said to Avua Barihi, tell me, did she write in the document, write a lien against real property, Achrayis, a responsibility to compensate you, right, with a lien against real property in the event that the property that she sold you was seized by creditors? Amarle, lo. He said no. Amarle imkain zil l'shlomo. If that's the case, Mar Shmuel said shalom aleichem, lech l'shalom. Nothing I could do to help you. I amarle v'hamar hudo amar achrayis ta soferu. I but Avua Barihi said to Shmuel, well, Shmuel, you're the one who said that when the phrase of achrayis, right, that's that phrase that says that I hereby, I encumber my property to back up this transaction. Shmuel, you're the one who said that if that line is missing, halacha lemaisa, we attribute that to scribal error. Again, Amar Lei, Shmuel responded, hani midi bishtari halva. That's true with a loan document. Aval bishtari mekach umemkar lo. But when it comes to ultimately, again, a sale of real estate, we don't apply that concept. Why? The avid inish, the zabin araliyomei. For it is common that sometimes a person will just go ahead literally and sell real estate for the day. So the Gemara is just backing up the distinction we made before with this Maisa. So bottom line, what comes out is like this. Shmuel is going to say as follows, that in general, when it comes to a loan document, no one ever loans money without the debt being secured by real property. And therefore, even if the Achrayis clause, what we call the Achrayis clause, which is the clause that says that in the event of default, all of your property is encumbered to pay back this debt, even if that phrase is not in there, the halacha views it as if it is in there, because that's part and parcel of a loan transaction and its omission is attributed to scribal error. On the other hand, the real estate transaction, Reuven sells property to Shimon and doesn't include an achrayis phrase. In that case, we don't assume that the parties agreed on achrayus. Why? It's the nature of the transaction. When people buy real estate, apparently they buy it, they have a greater appetite for risk, and they understand. And again, it's probably reflected in the purchase price itself as well. I'm going to pay a little bit more of a discount maybe, with the understanding that maybe this property will be seized. And maybe it was seized now, maybe it was seized in a year from now. I'll get whatever I can get out of the property and move on from there. That's the halacha. Incredible. Amar Abaye. Ruvein shemachar sadu l'shimen b'achrayis. So Abaye says like this. Ruvein sold property to Shimon b'achrayis. Okay, so again, so Reuven sold property to Shimon, and in there, in the property sale, because now we understand it has to be written in, it says, Shimon, in the event that the property that I sold you is seized from you by one of my creditors, I will make you whole. Okay, Uba Balchov de Reuven v'katar flimine, and sure enough, one of Reuven's creditors shows up to take the property from Shimon. So what's the halacha? Tinohu de azal Reuven umishtai dina bahadei. Reuven could involve himself with the creditor, with his creditor, and try to negotiate a separate settlement with the creditor. Velo matzi amarle, and the creditor can't say to Reuven, lav bal dvarin di diat. See, here's what's interesting. So just to follow up this case again. Reuven sells property to Shimon, and in the real estate contract, it says, Shimon, if any of my Reuven's creditors come and seizes the property in satisfaction of a pre-existing debt, I'll make you whole. Okay, sure enough, what happens? Reuven's creditor shows up at Shimon's doorstep. I'm here to collect property that you bought that was encumbered, and I'm here to seize it in satisfaction of my debt. Reuven, who is the seller to Shimon, but we'll call him the credit, right? But the borrower to the creditor. Reuven could go to the creditor and say, listen, let's work something out. Let's work something out so you don't have to get Shimon involved in this. Now, I would have thought that maybe the creditor could say to Reuven, listen, Reuven, sorry, that ship has sailed, right? Now, I'm going after encumbered properties. Don't talk to me. Halach l'maisi, the Gemara says, no, Reuven could assert himself. Why? Because Reuven could say, the amarle, the mafkis mine alai, di di hadar. Because Reuven could say, listen, I am involved. Why am I involved? Because creditor, if you go ahead and seize the encumbered land from Shimon, Shimon's coming back to me. So because Shimon's back to me, I am a party to this transaction. And because I'm a party to this transaction, therefore I have the right to negotiate with you now. Incredible. Igad Amri. So the Gemara tells an alternate version. Afilu shalo ba'achrayis nami. This is interesting. What happens if Reuven sold Shimon property without achrayis? And now despite that, Reuven's creditor is going after Shimon for satisfaction of the debt that Reuven owes to him. So now there's no achrayus over here. Even in this case, Reuven couldn't insert himself. Why? Because Reuven can say, listen, I don't want Shimon to be bragus with me. If you take Shimon's land, Shimon's going to be upset with me. I don't want that. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, Reuven couldn't insert himself. Incredible. Let's go weiter. Says the Gemara, Amar Abaye. Abaye says as follows, Reuven shemach arsad l'shimin, shalo ba'achrayis. So here we go. Reuven sells a field to Shimon without achrayis. Right? So which means, Reuven sells a field to Shimon, it's just a sale. And it's understood that if, let's say again, Reuven's creditors come and collect that field from Shimon, Shimon really has no recourse against Reuven. No recourse against Reuven. Okay. V'yatsu ala asikin. Now watch this. So just imagine the scene for just a moment. So Reuven's selling Shimon property, and there's no achrayus, there's no guarantee. And as the transaction is unfolding, so Shimon begins to hear rumblings that like people are claiming that it's encumbered, that Reuven owes them money. So now Shimon wants to back out. Is Shimon allowed to back out? So the Gemara says, Achalo hechsikba. If Shimon has not yet done a chazaka on the land, in other words, if he has not yet performed a proprietary act demonstrative of ownership, then yochol achzer bo. Then in that case, Shimon, the buyer, does have the ability to back out. However, mishehechzik bo, but if Shimon did a chazaka, Shimon performed a proprietary act, ain yochol achzer bo. Ultimately, again, at that point, Shimon did a chazaka. He can't back out. The transaction's done. Damrlei chaisa de kitri savis vekabalas. Because ultimately, again, Reuven can say to Shimon, you bought a bag of knots, right? It's one of those expressions that works better in the Aramaic. In other words, you bought a bag of air, you bought a bag of knots, deal with it. In other words, essentially, you can say to him, tough luck. You did the chazak already. I got it. Now there are people that are contesting ownership, but lamaisa, it's yours, and you don't have the ability to go ahead and back out. So the Gemara says, by the way, meimas ahavi chazaka. From what point is it considered to be that a chazaka has been performed? Mechidayish amitzri. Ultimately, again, when he begins to literally plow the edges of the field, right? So now I want to point out there are many different ways that one could go ahead and perform a proprietary act, right? You could put up a fence. I'm just giving an example of it. Rashi says, "Mechidayish amitzri mitakin gavuli hasada umagbi." Literally, again, you raise the edges, the borders of the field, to create almost like a line of demarcation. So very interesting halacha over here. So again, so one more time, just to reframe this, Reuven is selling Shimon a field without achrayas. Shimon hears that people are saying it's not Reuven's, or Reuven owes people money. Shimon wants to back out. Because remember, again, in this case, he doesn't have achrayas. So therefore, Shimon knows that if the field is seized by Reuven's creditor, Shimon is not going to have recourse. Excuse me. So now Shimon wants to back out because quite literally he does want to be left with nothing. So can he back out? So the Gemara says it depends. If he did not yet perform a proprietary act of chazaka, then Shimon has the ability to back out. Shalom al Yisrael. If, however, he already performed the chazaka, then again, it's his and he's stuck. All right, incredible. Let's go weiter. Says the Gemara. Others say that even if Shimon purchased the field with Achrayas, Shimon still can't back out. Why? You know, remember what's happening over here. In these cases, Shimon wants to back out because he has a bad feeling about this, right? Remember, no one's actually seized the field from Shimon. It's just that, you know, they're negotiating, and then as negotiations are coming to a close, Shimon hears all of this rumbling from Reuven's people, from his creditors that he owes the money. So he wants to just get out of this. So the alternate version says, even if Reuven was selling it to Shimon with Achrayas, Shimon still can't back out. Why? Because Reuven can say, listen, even with Achrayas, I'm only obligated to make you whole if something's been taken from you. Nothing has been taken from you. You're not out anything at all. And therefore, you really have no claim against me. All right, very interesting. So Itmar, let's go back to the Gemara, says, Hamocher sada lechavera v'nimtzeis she'eno shalo. So an interesting case here. It was a totally different case. Reuven sells a field to Shimon. So far, so good. Only one smidge of a detail over here. It didn't belong to Reuven. So Reuven sold Shimon a field that wasn't Reuven's. Okay. So now, of course, this is discovered. And then it turns out, it becomes clear, becomes known, that it wasn't Reuven's field to sell. So now the shaila is, what recourse does Shimon have against Reuven? So the Gemara says, Rav says that Shimon has the ability to sue Reuven for Mos is purchase price, and Shevach. Let's say again, Shimon, after having quote unquote purchased it from Reuven, improved the land. He invested money. So Rav says that Shimon has the ability to recapture the purchase price as well as improvements. Shmuel says, Mos Yeshlo Shevach Inbo. Very interesting. Shmuel says, no. Ultimately, again, he has that Shimon has a claim for purchase price, for Maos money, but does not have any claim for improvements. Okay, so let's analyze this. So the Gemara says, Bamine Merav Huna. So they ask Huna the following question. Pirish lo es ha-shevach ma'o. What happens if when Reuven sold this field to Shimon, right? And let's say Reuven said to Shimon, here's the deal. I'm selling you this field and I'm selling it to you with achrayas. And not only that, but I promise you that even if you improve the field and for some reason it is repossessed by one of my creditors, I'll pay you back the improvements. Explicitly said it. Now, of course, it turns out it wasn't Reuven's field to sell to begin with. So now it's been seized by Shimon. Shimon comes back to Reuven. What does Shimon have the ability to recapture from Reuven? So the Gemara says, Mao taima de Shmuel. So what Shmuel's like, remember, Shmuel was the one who said that Shimon could only sue for purchase price, but cannot sue for improvement. Why not? Maybe it's because in general, when Shimon purchased it, even if he purchased with Achrayas is only for the value of the land, for the purchase price. It's not for the Shevach. So therefore, the Shevach was never articulated. But in this case, Vahacha, who perish la? Odilma, the other possibility is, Odilma, Taimi the Shmuel Kivan the Lesley Karka, Mechse Keribis. Oh, listen to this. Maybe Shmuel's logic is like this. Let's take a step back for just a second, right? Reuven sold Shimon property, right? Of course, Shimon purchased it, thinking that it's Reuven's to sell. It turns out it's not Reuven's. It's not Reuven's, okay? Excuse me. It's not Reuven's. So now everyone agrees that Shimon has the ability to recapture the purchase price from Reuven, right? That everyone agrees with. The shaila is, what happens if Shimon was Meshaber? He improved the land. He improved the land. Does Shimon have the ability to recapture that from Reuven? So Rav says yes. Shmuel says no. What's Shmuel's logic? This is incredible. Shmuel's logic is like this. If you allow Shimon to go ahead and recapture Shevach improvements, it looks like ribis. It looks like interest. Why? Because it turns out there was no real estate transaction. Instead, what happened here? Shimon gave Reuven money. So now if it turns out that you make Reuven give back the purchase price and the improvement, then it sounds like what? It sounds like Reuven is paying interest back to Shimon. It looks like an interest payment. Fascinating, right? Because there's no actual land, because there's no real estate. It has the appearance of a ribis, of an interest transaction. Fascinating. So that's the shaila. That's the shaila. So now what happens? So what happens if when Reuven sold the fictitious land to Shimon, he guaranteed Shimon achrayis, both for purchase price and for shevach, for improvement. So do we say that since he explicitly articulated it, now that it turns out that Reuven's a fraud, Shimon could collect purchase price maos and shevach and improvement, or no, because the collection of improvement is going to look like ribis, going to look like interest. Which one? Arale, C responded. Remember again, this is Rav Huna. They asked Rav Huna. So he responded, in v'lov rafi biyadeh. So sometimes he said yes, sometimes he said yo, no, and the matter was not clear in his hands. Okay, so apparently, again, Rav Huna didn't have clarity on this sugya. Itmar, Amrav Nachman, Amr Shmuel, Mo'os yeshlo, Shevach einlo, Afa pi shepiresh lo asa shevach. So Rav says, now the Gemara quotes Rav Nachman, who's saying to Amr Shmuel, no, that in this kind of case, Shimon has the ability to sue Reuven for Mo'os, purchase price, does not have the ability to sue Reuven for Shevach, for improvement. Why not? So the Gemara says, my time, Kevin Dekarka Emo, Schar Ma'osav Omid Venotel. What are we concerned about? We're concerned once again that it looks like an interest payment. Just looks like an interest payment. So therefore, Aloch Lamaisa, you cannot go ahead and sue for that. Okay, so both say, so that's so far the Gemara saying, suggesting over here. Say, Rav Rav Nachman, so Rav is the Kashat Rav Nachman. So we learned that you cannot extract. Now, this is actually interesting, a little bit of a separate halacha. That you can't extract from encumbered properties, for achilas peros, literally again for the consumption of peros, of produce. The shevach karkos, improvement of land, ulamazon ha'isha v'habanos, or for the support of one's wife and children, minechas mishabat, from incumbent properties, mitnei tikuna olam, ultimately again for the benefit of society. All right, so let's unpack this a little bit. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, lemazon ha'isha v'habanos, tenai ksurisha mekabel alav, at tehe yas v'bebesi, umissina minechasi, v'china banos, listen to this. So there's a Tanaim Ksuva, right? That a woman ultimately, again, even after death of her husband, is supported by the estate. Female daughters are supported by the estate until they get married. So you cannot, let's say the husband's estate sold off all the property. So now the estate can't go ahead and claw back property in order to take care of this obligation to the wife and to the daughters. Why not? Mipnei tikuna olam, for the benefit of society. What does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Mipnei tikuna olam. Shim'ata omer yitrifu lekuchos, al kach in lecha adam shel keach sada mechabero, ta in lecha adam she'in chov zem mutal alav, v'davar she'in lo kitzvihi, v'achilas peros shevach karkos nami, davar she'in yaduahi, hu, v'ina lekuchos yodin leizar bekach. Here's what's interesting. There are certain things that, although there's an encumbrance, we can't let the creditor be motzi sold property, extract sold property. Why? Because otherwise, the whole fabric of transactional reality will fall apart. Just a simple example. Let's use Mazon Ishan, right? So a man is obligated to support his wife, both, again, during his lifetime, and even in the event of death, the estate is obligated to. Now, same thing with single daughters. So now, what happens if Halacha Lamaisa, the estate, sold off all of its property, and now wants to go ahead and claw back some of the property to take care of the mazonos of the wife, the mazonos of the children, of the daughters? The concern is if we allow it, no one's ever going to want to buy property. Why? Because the truth is, people have wives and people have children. And if there is this encumbrance that is always there, it makes it almost impossible to buy property with clear title. With clear title. Sefer Chazal said, you are not allowed to extract sold property for the purpose of the mazonos of one's wife or the mazonos of one's daughters. And included in that, ultimately, is shevach karkos, improvement of land. So the Gemara says, now what's interesting is, so you can't pay these debts, these aforementioned listed debts, so you can't pay them from encumbered properties, but you can pay them from unencumbered properties. And what do we see from here? The Shevach Karkos. One of the things in this list is improvement to real property. Now what's the case of improvement to real property? My love below Keach Migazlon. Are we not talking about a case where Halacha L'maisa, Ruvain, sold property that was not his to Shimon? Shimon now finds out that it wasn't his, right? The real owner comes and takes it back. That Shimon could go back to Ruvain both for Ma'oz purchase price and Shevach and improvement. Okay, maybe Shimon can't go and retrieve Ruvain's Nechasim Mishubadim, right? He can't go and retrieve encumbered properties, but he absolutely could collect them unencumbered properties. In which the Gemara says, Lo bebalchov. No, we're not talking about that case. We're talking about a creditor. It's about a creditor. Okay. So the Gemara says, a creditor, Lo bebalchov. So the Gemara says, Iba balchov. Eima reisha imotzian lachilas peros. So here's the problem. If we're talking about a creditor, so the reisha said, you also can't extract nechasim mishubadim for the consumption of peros, of produce. Viba balchov, mi isle peri. Is there such thing as peros when it comes to a balchov, when it comes to a creditor? Of course not. Farmer Shmuel said, balchov gova es hashevach, right? That ultimately, again, a balchov, a creditor, could go ahead and collect the improvement. Shevach in, improvement, yes. Aval peros lo, but ultimately, again, not any kind of produce. Incredible. So the Gemara says, elo, pshita v'gozo v'nigzal. So you have to say, what is it talking about? You have to say that it's talking about a case of where Reuven stole property. Unbeknownst to Shimon, Reuven sells the stolen property to Shimon, marketing it as his own property. Shimon then finds out. Shimon goes back to Reuven, and he could claim Ma'oz purchase price and Shevach, and improvement. Again, the caveat being, he can't claim improvement from the Chasim Mishubadim, but absolutely can prove from the Chasim Anichorin, to which the Gemara says, so since the first part of the Braisa was talking about a case of stolen property, so the second part of the Braisa also has to be talking about stolen property. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, maybe the cases are totally independent. Perhaps again, both situations are supposed to be reckoned as fundamentally different. To which the Gemara says, I vaholo tani hachi, but I, it didn't say this, right? The Gemara says, but it didn't go ahead. Excuse me. To which the Gemara says, but it didn't actually say this. Vaholo tani hachi. To which the Gemara says, I'm sorry. To which the Gemara says, l'shevach karkos kitzad. So the Gemara says, so what's the case of shevach karkos? Hari shegazel sade mechavero. Here's the case. Right, Reuven went ahead and stole the field for Yotzim and Tachas Yado, and now ultimately, again, it leaves Reuven's possession. Goves Akerim and Nechasim Mishubadim, the Shevach Gozem and Nechasim and Nechorim. That ultimately, again, he's able to collect the Maos, right, the purchase price from Nechasim Mishubadim, and ultimately, again, the improvement. Permeiv Nechasim and Nechorim, to which the Gemara says, Hey Chidami, what's the case? If you want to say that it's literally as we just said before, so gazlan miman gavi, then ultimately who is the robber collecting from exactly, right? When ultimately, again, remember, The rabbi, it sounds like the robber is coming, or the robber is collecting something. The robber never paid for anything. The robber is not out anything. So what is, so what, who would he be collecting from? Ella, lafki gom shegazol sadam echavero, umechara la'achar v'hishbicha. So rather, what do you have to say? You have to say that it's talking about a situation of where Reuven stole property, sold it to Shimon, and Shimon went ahead and improved it. And now what happens? And now what happens? That halacha l'maisa, would appear to be that Shimon should be entitled not only to Ma'os, the purchase price, but should also be entitled halacha l'maisa to Shevach, which again would ultimately contradict the position of Rav Nachman. Amalei, lav tarutze kametaratz. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Tartachi bebalchov. So the Gemara says, you already gave an answer. If you're going to give an answer, if you're already going to change the way the Brisa reads, so change it in a different way and say that it refers to what? A balchov, a creditor. Okay? A balchov. So halacha l'maaseh, again, we're talking about a situation where ultimately, again, the land wasn't stolen, but rather the land itself was taken by the seller's creditor. All right, so the Gemara tries to prove this point. So Toshma, lachilas peros ketzad. Ultimately, again, what's the case of where ultimately you're able to be compensated for peros, for produce? So the Gemara says, hari shegazel salami chavero. So if a person stole a field from another, right? Reuven stole a field. Vahari hi yotze mitachas yado kishu gove gove esaker menachasim mishubadim. Uperos government achasim menichorin. So we'll say. So the problem over here is we're coming. We're getting a little bit like into somewhat of a circular situation. So right. So let's analyze how to see this. We're trying to figure out what's the case of achilas peros. So if you can tell me the case is like this, right? Reuven stole a field, and now ultimately, again, the field leaves his possession. Kishugova, when he goes ahead and collects, right, the most, the purchase price. He collects the purchase price from encumbered property. And ultimately, again, other produce, or the right, we'll call peros. Right? Peros, produce from unencumbered property. I don't understand, what are you talking about? Once again, what's the case? Ultimately, again, if you say that the cases that we just mentioned, I'm talking about a stolen case, a case of stolen property. Kazlan miman gavi. They will say, if Reuven stole the land, it sounds like Reuven is able to collect, right? Reuven stole the land, he's able to collect the keren from the chasim mishubadim and the peros from the chasim nechorin. If Reuven is the thief, who is he collecting from? It doesn't even make sense. To which the Gemara said, la'af kigon shegazol sada mechavero umachora li'achar v'hishpicha. Rather, they will say, what do you have to say? You have to say that halacha l'maaseh, we're coming full circle. It must be that we're talking about a case of our halacha l'maaseh, Reuven stole a field, sold it to Shimon. Now it turns out that it's stolen. Shimon comes back to Reuven for two things. Number one, ma'os, purchase price. Number two, peros, produce. And it sounds like the halacha is that for Karen, for the purchase price, he's able to collect from nechasim mishubadim, and for everything else, nechasim b'nei chorin. Okay, Amar Rava. Rava says, not necessarily. Acha ma'askinan, what's the case? Acha ma'askinan. So the Gemara says, Kigon, Shegazel Sada Mechavero Malea Peros. This is interesting. So I'll say, so the case over here is where Reuven stole a field that was filled with produce. The Achalas Peros. Then Reuven went ahead and he consumed the Peros. The Chafar Barborin Sichin Umaaros. And he goes and he physically destroys the field, right? He digs pits and cisterns and everything else. Ba Nigzal Ligbos Karen Kova Menechasim Mishubadim. Ba nigzal ligbos peros kove minachas benichoros. This is interesting. So the Gemara wants to set it up that perhaps it's not a case of someone selling stolen property, but rather again it's a case of a person stealing the property himself. And halacha l'maisa, what's the case over here? The case over here is Reuven stole property, and then what did he do? And it was filled with peros, and he did two things. Number one, he consumed the peros. And number two, he dug holes in the field, thereby kind of like destroying the field. So what's the halacha? So when he goes ahead, so now when the true owner of the field comes to collect damages, what we'll call keren, comes to collect keren, ultimately, which is the principle, right, which is the actual value of the field itself from Reuven, that he collects from the chasim mishubadim. That ultimately, again, he's going to collect from real property. But halacha lemaisa, when he comes to collect to the peros, he only collects the peros ultimately, again, from nechasim b'nei chorin, from unencumbered property. So also, we're going to stop over here for today. Excuse me. So therefore, our major core question still remains unanswered, right? Which is that halacha lemaisa, in a case where Reuven goes ahead and steals property and sells it to Shimon, everyone is in agreement that Shimon has the ability to sue Reuven for the purchase price, what we call keren or ma'os, which is the amount of money paid for the field. The shaila is, if Shimon went ahead and made improvements to the field, does Shimon have the ability to recapture those amounts from Reuven or not? So that's our machlokis, Rav and Shmuel. Rav says yes, Shmuel says no. We now see also that Shmuel's logic. Why does Shmuel say no? Shmuel says because it looks like ribbis. It looks like interest. Because essentially what's going to end up happening is Reuven's going to pay principal plus an additional amount of money, and there's no land. There's no actual real estate involved over here. So that, we'll say, that machlokes is still open-ended. And Emir Hashem, we will be zoche Emir Hashem to go ahead and resolve it tomorrow. So our major takeaways from today, say, is that so that machlokes is open-ended. Our other important takeaway was a statement of Shmuel that halacha lemaisa again, Shmuel held that achrayus tal sofer. Shmuel made a fascinating distinction between two different types of transactions, a loan transaction and a real estate transaction. In a loan transaction, no one ever lends money without achrayis, without an encumbrance upon the debtor's property. And if that line, if that phrase is not there, we assume ta'a sofer, it was a mistake, but we believe that they meant to include it, but halacha lemaisa, it was just omitted, and halachically, we view it there even if it wasn't omitted, even if it wasn't written. A real estate transaction, on the other hand, interestingly enough, is people will buy real estate even without achrayis. Aye, but the risk. Okay, so first off, there's risk, you'll buy it at a discount. And also when it comes to real estate, the person will get whatever they can get out of it. And even if it gets repossessed at a later time, they'll still benefit from it from someone. But I think also there's just a beautiful Musar Haskilness also, this idea. I wanted to finish with that first and then come back a little bit. You know, just this idea that according to Shmuel, achrayis etah sofer, that sometimes even things that we don't say or things that we don't write are automatically included in the reality, right? So in other words, Reuven lent Shimon money. Reuven didn't write a phrase of achrayis, an encumbrance. But again, even though he didn't say it or he didn't write it, halacha lemaisa it's there. You know, it's thing that there's a lot like, you know, in relationships. So sometimes there are things that we know we should say to other people. Right? I should tell my wife that I love her. Right? I should tell my kids that I'm proud of them. Not just like when they do something of note, but just day in and day out. I should tell my fellow Jew how much I love them and appreciate them. So a lot of times, you know, what ends up happening is like in life, we don't say things because my wife knows that I love her. And my kids know how proud I am of them. And every Jew knows that I'm madly and deeply in love because I love every single Jew in Am Yisrael. So I think what the Gemara is also sensitizing us to is don't assume that people know the things you think they know. All right, let me try that once more. Don't assume that people know the very things that you assume they know already. Say it. Okay, happens to be by achrayus, by an encumbrance, it works, right? If you did not go ahead and write a phrase of achrayus, an encumbrance, it's there. Reuven didn't communicate it to Shimon when he was lending money. It's okay, it's halacha lemaisa, it's there. But that's only by loans. By everything else, if you want someone to know something, you need to say it. See, you need to tell people how you feel about them. You need to tell people how much you care about them. You need to make sure to tell the people who are meaningful to you in your life how and why they are meaningful to you and how much you appreciate what it is and what they do and what they give. You know, just spent the last day today in Eretz Yisrael. Such an overwhelming day. Let's speak about it a different time. But from going ahead and visiting with a bereaved mother in Yavne, to then going to the Moshav or to the kibbutz of Zikim and of Kerem Shalom and Kfar Azo, and you know, we realize that we are part of such a strong and such a vibrant and such a holy people. And I realized that one of the things kind of reflecting this Gemara is, I don't know that we say, you know, like, I love you to each other enough. I mean, like, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. I don't mean to people you're related to. I just mean to people with whom you share the same soul with, because we're all a part of Am Yisrael. I don't know. Sometimes I think, like, you know, in times of tzara, times of difficulty, so we take the time to say, I love you. We take the time to say, I'm with you. We take the time to say, I'm standing by your side. But the truth is, we should always say it. We should always say it. We should always take the opportunity to say how much we love each other. We should always take the opportunity to say how much we care for one another. And even though, again, of course, you know that I love you, and you know that I love you, I know that you love me. Sorry, it's late. Words aren't coming out of the same way. Right? We all know that we love each other. We might know it, but it's important to say it. The only time in halacha where you don't have to say something and it still creates a reality is in loan documents. In every other area of life, in every other relationship, if you want someone to know something, you have to say it. If you want your family to know that you love them, say it and say it often. And if you want your fellow Jews in Am Yisrael to know how much you love them, say it with all of your heart. Chevra, a great zechus. Sorry, just a very overwhelming day today, but a great zechus, Baruch Hashem, to be able to do the daf with you from Yerushalayim. I know that it's not the same virtually, but thank you. This is selfish that I get to learn with all of you. I get to do the daf with all of you. It's an incredible zechus. Incredible schos to learn with all of you. Incredible schos to be here with our incredible chaver here in Yerushalayim. An overwhelming schos to be here with our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, who are literally kodesh kadoshim, each and every one of them. Chaver, I wish you all a wonderful day, and I, Meretz Hashem, look forward to learning together with all of you tomorrow. Kol tov and shkayach, everyone.